You are listening to Adagio Fits, Clarissa Explains It All, podcast number 10, Mental Health Awareness, PMDD. Hey friends, welcome to the podcast today. I am so grateful that it is the last week of school and that it is almost summer and I finally can shy away from homework and we can take our little family on some vacations and some adventures for the summer that I have planned. So I'm really excited that it is the last week of school. However, I do have quite a bit to get done. In our last podcast, in fact, the last four podcasts, we kind of had a series of the six dimensions of wellness. And we discussed those in depth and talked about ways that you can help those dimensions be well and that you can reach the zest and excitement in life. Today, I want to talk to you about something that I go through, a very vulnerable subject for me. And I do this because May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And I think that it's really important that we are vulnerable. And within the podcast, there's so much information that I could have put in this podcast. And I could talk about this for hours. But I tried to simplify as much as I could to where you would have an understanding and an education. But of course, there are some things that might be missed. So if you have any questions, feel free to write them down. You can email me or you can post them in the show notes below and I would love to answer them. So I've really had to muster up a lot of courage and I've had to do lots of affirmations today, talking to myself that vulnerability is a sign of strength and that I am strong and I am ready to share a story which I have actually never shared fully with anybody before. All right, into Mental Health Awareness, PMDD, here we go. I always wonder if this mental illness will kill me one day. I'm sure it will. The brightest days are good. I enjoy them. The darkest days, however, seem like I won't ever escape them. Each time it feels like maybe this could be it, the one that I don't come back from. But somehow I make it through. PMDD is cruel. It's like every month sanity is detangled in front of me, and I have to hold on to it. There's a glimmer of hope that this month I'll be cured. Then suddenly it's ripped away. It's like a switch that is flicked inside me as soon as ovulation begins. From that point on, I become the opposite of what I consider to be my normal self. I'm suddenly extremely anxious, paranoid, worried, irritable, and I can snap at the smallest things. The rages are life-destroying. They hurt everyone I care for and scare off anyone else. My period finally begins, and with a day or two, my mood lifts. The anxiety goes away. The paranoia is no longer there. I can think rationally and logically. I have energy to do anything I want. And sadly, most of that time is spent picking up the pieces of the storm that lives inside of me and has, for now, disappeared. At the start, depression starts to set in. Aching body, foggy head, headaches, high anxiety, pains in the stomach, sweating, panic attacks when I go in public, hysterical crying, at my worst, thoughts of suicide. Then my period arrives. All those feelings and thoughts are gone just like that. I'm back. Me again. I'm back to normal. I can go to work with ease if I still have a job. I can go out anywhere with no panic attacks. Anxiety. What anxiety? I am fun. I enjoy being around people and they enjoy being around me. I wish I could be this person all the time. I hate knowing it is short-lived and the devil lady will be back soon. So these are just a couple of descriptions that I found some of the members of a group I'm part of submitted when they were asked to define what PMDD is like for them. So let me tell you my story. When I was 10 years old, the symptoms started happening as I probably started developing. And I noticed that they were triggered by coming home from school. I hated being home. I think being home was a reminder of being back with me. You know, at school, you're so caught up on all the social things. And when you come home, you know, what's left? All those friends are gone, all that. That's stuff to take away. Your focus is gone. Those distractions, that's what I'm trying to say. So at 12 years old, I remember breaking a mirror because my hair wasn't working right. And later that year, I broke a window because I couldn't trace a picture that I had posted onto the window, onto fabric for a project. My period started when I was 12, and it was about 10 days long, and it was super, super heavy for the first 5 days. It still is to this day super heavy, but now only about 5 days long, and 3 of those 5 are super heavy days. And when I say like heavy period days, I'm talking like 15 to 20 minutes per tampon, so I have to be super close to a restroom all day long. When I was probably about 15 or 16, I remember kicking a door in our house and putting a hole in that door because my parents wouldn't let me go with some friends. And as much as I would like to and have in the past blamed how I grew up and how I was parented, I'm getting to the point where now at 32, I think that those episodes, if I would have known back then to track my period, I think they would have happened within my red zone days. And it wasn't caused by people, it was caused by my disorder. So there's no blame there anymore. As my parents started getting panicked, which I'm assuming they were panicked and wondering what the heck they could do with their daughter who was destroying things. The door and the window and the mirror, those were just little things, like those were the bigger things, but there were a lot more little things that I broke in anger and frustration. So they kind of started, you know, threatening me if I broke things that I'd have to pay for them, etc. So I turned the anger to myself and inflicted a lot of self-harm. Anywhere that couldn't be seen, I would hit. I would slam that body part into a wall or the floor. I would scrape it. I always had massive bruises on my thighs, like a reminder that I was still alive. You know, when I inflicted self-harm, it was a reminder that I was still there and I could still feel, because this disorder was so distressing for me. Throughout my teens, I had terrible acne and took everything you could name for acne. I tried everything. And, you know, maybe the acne was caused by or inflamed by my cycle, but or it was just normal and part of my genetics, but it was really bad. So at the age of 15, I started taking Accutane. And this was my sophomore year in high school. And it's Accutane, if you don't know anything about it, it is an acne drug derived from vitamin A. And it's really, really dangerous. In fact, you have to take 2 forms of birth control while taking Accutane because it can cause that much harm to the baby if you were to get pregnant. So it's just a super dangerous drug to take. And as dangerous as it was, I took it and I had a lot of side effects with it, but I was desperate, you know, to clear my acne. But some of those side effects was that taking it while I had this disorder caused my first battle with a suicide attempt. Suicide, it was, the thoughts of it was all consuming. It's what I thought of and contemplated all day and into the night until I fell asleep. While I was at school, how I could kill myself while I was at school, while I was at home. And it was a really dark time. I remember trying to make deals with God that if I would choose to live and not kill myself, that He would take it from me. And, you know, as a teen, these were just pleas. Slamming my head as hard as I could into the floor as I pleaded, and then became so angry that He wasn't taking these feelings, these emotions from me. He wasn't there. And many times this happened, which led to tears and tears and hiding. I would hide under my desk to just in the dark to remove myself from this world. With how this was playing out, my parents got me into a wonderful therapist who affirmed everything that I was feeling and then confirmed that I wasn't healthy, but really had no diagnosis for me. My parents feared bipolar disorder, and there were lots of whispering sessions with me in the subject line, I'm sure. But this therapist helped me work on my cognitive thinking, you know, how I thought. So that, and that helped a lot. And I think that my therapist, my parents, and probably to be honest, myself, I just thought that something was missing and that, you know, I would grow out of this. So we were just managing until that happy, glorious day where I was symptom free, because there just was not a diagnosis. In the meantime of all this therapy, I had done multiple antidepressants. And went on and off those depending on how I was feeling. You know, I would come back to normal after some of these symptoms would go away, and I don't need these. I'm perfectly healthy. In my thoughts, leaving this world or finding a way to leave this life, you know, was just always in the back of my mind. I just wanted to escape. When I went to college, the problems subsided. I think that being on my own and being able to manage my time and what I needed against no one else's agenda was a huge part in why the symptoms subsided. Life was great. And then I started having problems when I got engaged to my husband. Taking birth control right before we were married, which I don't do anymore, by the way, because anything I have tried birth control-wise has messed me up. And so I can't do any birth control. And since our engagement up until I was 29, I had always had smaller issues that would come on and off for years. Nothing that came out except for arguments with my family, but more or less the self-harm was still there and my frustration towards myself was still there. And it wasn't until I had my third daughter that I knew something was really wrong with me. I continue to use the word broken, that is how I describe myself. I was 29. I had started having more serious problems after this birth. And I was so shocked at why they wouldn't go away. I had my third daughter in November of 2014. Black Friday, so the Friday after Thanksgiving, became my black hell. And I still mourn that day. Every time Black Friday comes around since, I still mourn that day. I didn't really feel good that day. For some reason, I was hyper aware of how my clothes weren't fitting. You know, I'd only had a baby for 2 weeks previous to that. I was really upset that day about how chubby my face was and that I was having hot flashes and panicking about how I would be seen in public. And it was very, very upsetting. And I was very, very low, very fast. Extremely fast drop from being able to handle my third baby to not being able to function. I spent most of December hiding at home, ashamed for the world that I was seeing, and especially the person that I thought I saw in the mirror. I was disgusted with myself. And so sick of being affected by, of everyone being affected by me, especially my girls. And it was a really miserable, dark month. And honestly, I'm really good at removing me out of the picture for the most part. Like, I don't talk about me. I'm not in photos. You know, I really sink back into the background of things. But our third daughter had some health problems, and that added on so much, the volatility just shot right up, because not only could I not take care of myself, but my baby was having problems. January 4th was my breaking day. It was my lowest day. My husband and I were fighting I don't even remember what the fight was about. And during that fight, I started packing my bag because I was so sure that I was the problem and that I needed to leave. I didn't really have thoughts of killing myself, but I knew that my family would be so much better off without a broken mother. And that was a really, really low point. This is probably the lowest I've ever been. Because in high school, it was just me. But here I was leaving things that I loved because I thought that loving them meant leaving them. So my husband, being so good, he called my old therapist, who happens to be a family friend, so we actually had his information, and he referred us to his understudy who took over his practice, and he then mentioned, you know, get some good sleep and start moving. So I started into therapy. This was January of 2015. I started into therapy once a week. I loved going to therapy because I was affirmed that something was going on. But it wasn't something cognitive. Like, it wasn't just my thinking that was going on. And what happened was my therapist suggested that I start tracking my period. So I started tracking my period faithfully, and it was very hard to be honest, even with an app on my phone. But I realized after about 6 months that the days I ovulated, I always knew when I ovulated because it hurt. And about 24 hours before I ovulated and 24 hours after I ovulated, I was very cranky, very impatient. And then I would do really well for 3 or 4 days. And then about 5 to 7 days before my period started, at that time it was about 10, now it's about 5 to 7 days, I lost all light and I was at my worst. And there was a day about 6 months into my therapy that I was finally diagnosed. And that day was a beautiful day because it was one filled with hope. And it was one of a starting point for a journey of healing. Let me talk to you about what took 20 years, 20 years to find out. I have PMDD. PMDD stands for premenstrual dysphoric disorder. This is also known as premenstrual dysphoria, or late luteal phase dysphoric disorder. PMDD is a cyclical hormone-based mood disorder with symptoms that come in the luteal phase of menstrual cycle. So this is the phase between ovulation and when your flow starts. That's the luteal phase. This disorder affects an estimated 2 to 10% of women who are of reproductive age. While PMDD is directly connected to a woman's menstrual cycle, it is not a hormone imbalance, which I had been to so many doctors saying, your hormones are just fine. And I'm like, I'm not fine. So they instantly prescribed an antidepressant. That is not, I'll get to that, but that is not how to handle this disorder. It is suspected that it's a genetic disorder with symptoms often worsening over time and following reproductive events, including ovulation, pregnancy, birth, miscarriage, and menopause. So I will continue to get worse over time, and I will continue to have hard postpartum. And women with PMDD, are at risk for postpartum depression and suicide behavior, which is just so me. PMDD is distinguishable by the dysphoria that is experienced. It's a really interesting feeling. Feelings of being completely overwhelmed, spiraling thoughts, outrage, anger, frustration, anxiety, suicidal ideation coupled with the physical symptoms, which include bloating and tender breasts and cramps and lower back pain and tired and being melancholy and sleepy and appetite changes. I mean, you name it, I experience everything up that line. I'm really sensitive to the changes in my hormones during my cycle. I can feel them very, very acute. And I also experience a few days of unstable moods and physical symptoms during that ovulation, like I talked about. My PMDD does not occur once a month, but twice a month, because it's during the ovulation part, and then it's during right before my period starts. So I really only get 10 to 14 days of feeling like myself, but I really only get 7 to 10 days completely symptom-free of either the physical part of a menstrual cycle or the emotional part of a menstrual cycle. So it makes for some long months sometimes. So most of the research that's been done on PMDD has actually been done in the last 5 to 7 years. It wasn't even in the therapy diagnosis book until the past 5 years. People just thought it was PMDD, or they would just kind of rub it off and say it was completely non-existent. Which is, as a teen, it explains why they didn't really know what was going on and couldn't put their finger on what was going on, because, you know, it wasn't in the book. So some of the symptoms of PMDD, which this came off of a website that I will link in the show notes. I really like this website, specifically geared towards PMDD. Symptoms: feelings of sadness or despair, or even thoughts of suicide. Feelings of tension or anxiety. Panic attacks, mood swings, or frequent crying. Lasting irritability or anger that affects other people. Lack of interest in daily activities and relationships. Trouble thinking or focusing. Tiredness or low energy. Food cravings or binge eating. Trouble sleeping, feeling out of control. And then there's the physical symptoms, right, that I kind of mentioned above: bloating, breast tenderness, headaches, joint or muscle pain. These symptoms occur during a week or two before menstruation and go away within a few days after the bleeding begins. So a diagnosis of PMDD requires that you have at least 5 of these symptoms. I have them all. So I'm actually about 3% of the 2 to 10% of women who can have PMDD. I'm about 3% of that 2 to 10%. So on top of that, on top of those symptoms, I experience 2 things. The first is that I go to sleep as like the normal me. And that morning when I wake up, I literally can feel down in my fingertips and in my toes a buzzing sensation. It really affects what I do. I know that the PMDD is happening again when I feel that, when I wake up with that. I can literally feel my blood and hormones pumping through my veins. Like this hyper awareness. It kind of feels like when you drink like an energy drink, and I don't drink them very often, so I'm very sensitive to caffeine. But when I have taken an energy drink, it's that same buzzing down in your, like in your limbs. So not only do I notice what's going on inside of me and how intense that is, but I notice this space around me, the vibrations of objects and other people, that everything has an energy. For example, I will become a perfectionist about how my bed is made, because if it's wrong, I feel that vibration, that it's the energy is not flowing over these objects. That's the only way I can explain it. Or my husband can't like rub my arms or my back because there's too much energy. There's transfer there. There's too much stimuli there. So he has to place his hands like really softly, and he can only do it when I'm awake. Like if he were to place his hand on my shoulder while I was sleeping or on my side, there have been times when I have like punched him and elbowed him, in my sleep, because it's just too much. And like, we can't even hold hands when we go to bed because it will keep me awake, because his vibration is bumping into my already screaming buzz, and I just can't handle that energy. I also have running thoughts and discussions in my head constantly during this time. I'm talking to myself, trying to get myself through every situation of the day. I can't have a good conversation with others because I'm so worried inside my head. What is going on? What should I say? What's going to make sense? And I know it. I know that I can't have a good conversation with others. And therefore, those thoughts spiral me down even more. It's kind of like no matter what I do, if I'm not careful, you know, I go down into this tank. I'm very aware of people's verbal and nonverbal language. And so that's great. That's like a superpower, right? But I also have low patience. And so I pull away from social events and socializing with friends and stuff during those times. So when I looked on, when I started doing research, I found that there were some treatment options with PMDD. For example, lifestyle changes, exercise, nutrition, and diet. Those are the three that actually have been proven to help. Contraceptives and homeopathic medicines, they need to do more research on. Menopause by surgery, so having like a hysterectomy is good, but the data for that research has not been completely proven. So it's showing good results, but they don't know if that's correlated. There's also menopause by drugs, and that has actually been extremely harmful to women with PMDD, and also what has been extremely harmful or hasn't given good results is hormone therapies and antidepressants. So coming full circle, a doctor just wants to prescribe antidepressants, and that's not okay. So speaking of antidepressants, after a few months of therapy, my therapist and I decided that medication would probably help me until I was to a point where I could manage life again. And we talked about strategies of how to take certain medications and what I could do. And I also did a lot of research into what medications would work for this and what other women's experiences had been. So after talking with my therapist and doing lots of research on my own, I put an idea together of what kind of regimen I needed. And I hate taking medication. I hate the idea of something else having control over me. That's part of a flawed thinking. I know that because I know that medication is good. But I just didn't want to be on it, especially with my past history of all the acne medications I had taken and all the antidepressants that I had taken that just did not make me feel good and made things worse. So I am so grateful. One of the things that I say to people who, you know, may have a behavioral or disorder or a mental illness like this, that you not only have a good therapist, but you also have a good doctor, and you need a team of people. You need to be able to rely on these people, that they will listen to you and work with you. And I shopped around for doctors for a while. Surprisingly, I pretty much found a doctor in my own backyard, and she has been wonderful for me. She listened to me, and she allowed me to actually choose how I wanted to be medicated because it was, in her book, safe, and it fell in line with her practices, which actually she has even used the same dosing and instructions for other women and have had good results too. So that's actually really awesome for me. Like, I feel like even if all of this problems with this mental health was just for other women to not experience the hell that I go through about 10 days a month, that it was totally worth it. As I did research on my own, they fell in line with the treatment options that I have found from doctors, is that diet is a huge part in diet, exercise, sleep, and scheduling are the four main parts of minimizing my symptoms. Which, when I look at this now, those four things are what anybody needs with any disorder, any illness. They need to work on their diet. They need to exercise. They need good sleep, and they need to schedule and plan. Aren't those like the four basics of human survival, of human health? So diet, eating whole foods, getting everything processed out of my body, no caffeine, no processed meats, no crackers, no, I mean, anything that is processed was not okay. I still struggle with that because I get huge cravings. That's part of those. That's part of my symptoms. Huge cravings for carbs and for like chips, chocolate, cheese. Yeah. Anything that starts with a C, caramel. My husband and I were joking that they all started with C's and they all were meant for me because they started with C. And carrots. No, not carrots. I don't crave carrots when I'm in my luteal phase, but I definitely like them when I'm feeling a bit healthier. So whole foods. I need to eat more carbs during my luteal phase. So when I ovulate to when my period starts, my body's using a lot more energy because during those days, your body actually thinks it's pregnant. Whether it is or is not, that egg is going down into your uterus. Your body thinks it's pregnant. Therefore, it's revving up, building up those, you know, that cushion for its baby. And our body needs more carbs. So I try to eat. I up my carbs a little bit during that time to help with those energy needs and help with like how tired I am. If I'm trying to stay low carb, I will find myself binging so bad if I don't get enough carbs earlier in the day. By the afternoon, I need to binge in order to survive the rest of the day. I make sure that I eat a lot more iron the week of and after my period. My iron drops very, very low when my period starts because it's so heavy. So I eat a lot of red meat the week of and the week after. And that's not something that I really like to do. But it has really helped my energy levels and my ability to function. So that pretty much gives me 1 week to have a low carb diet. So I'm always changing my diet. It's tough sometimes. I can't like go buy a meal plan. I can't rely on low carbs all the time. So it's something that I have to be very aware of all of the time. And finally, when it comes to diet, drinking a lot of water, tons of water. And then if I don't drink enough water, I get really bad headaches. And then also I have a lot of different supplements, herbs, vitamins and minerals and probiotics to help make sure my body stays in optimal health to give me the best advantage. The second thing of that I have really added into my regimen was exercise. Before my third daughter, I was a huge ballroom dancer. I taught dance. I've always danced. It's what helped me in high school kind of manage all of my emotions. But I didn't do it for survival at that point. And when I started therapy after my third daughter was born, I really found myself in exercise and it truly did save my life. Movement saved my life, gave me something to work towards, gave me focus. And I exercise 6 days a week, even when I'm sick. I can't not exercise. Part of me now hangs on to it. I do a mix of cardio and strength during my luteal phase. My red zone is what we call it here at this house. I kind of intuitively work out because my mental outlook is really volatile. I usually don't sleep very well. I'm going to go into sleep next. And so I have to, you know, how do I feel today? Okay, I really just feel like I just need to run and watch a movie while I run. So I'll get on the treadmill and I'll run and I tell myself 10 minutes. Like, it, just do the first 10 minutes. And after that, if you want to stop, you can stop. But most of the time what I find is after I hit the 10-minute mark, I'm like, I'm going to keep going. And then sometimes when I'm done doing cardio, I'm like, you know what? I could probably lift a small split set and weights or something like that, and I'll just do, or a single set and weights. And so I really have to intuitively work out in order to get that 6 days a week during those, during that luteal phase. So exercise has saved my life. Sleep. Oh, sleep. I am nocturnal, or I'm like a tornado when I sleep during this luteal phase. It is so bad. And I've posted before on Instagram, like, hi, it's 3 a.m. I'm Clarissa and I work out 3 a.m. because I couldn't sleep. As I have eaten better, I have actually been sleeping better, as I have noticed that those two are correlated heavily. But during my ovulation and during the 5 to 7 days before my period starts, I take melatonin every night to help me sleep. That has worked wonders in my life. Melatonin is all natural. Originally, I was given, I can't even think what it's called, something prescribed for sleep. But there were so many side effects, and even the pharmacist, when I picked it up, warned me, you know, don't take more than such and such milligrams. This is super, super dangerous. And I had a girlfriend who said, you know, I have to give my daughter melatonin because she doesn't sleep. And so I looked into it and I tried it, and it was wonderful. Also, I have to take extra naps. And that's the only way that I can get through my day, through the witching hour, being a good mom, is taking extra naps. And finally, scheduling and planning. I know I talked about this kind of in my last episode, but I have to meal plan and prep my meals faithfully for the week that I'm going to struggle. Because if not, I won't eat and then I'll binge. Sometimes that means saying we're going to go out to eat, and then we make sure and go somewhere where I can get a really healthy salad that I do not have to make. I don't have to do any prep. I don't have to clean up. Sometimes eating out is the best option for me. And then when I schedule and plan, I really have to make sure that I take days off, that I take it easy, that I'm easy on my kids, that I don't go to social events. I keep family parties away from that time so that I don't have anxiety breakdowns or frustration in those areas cause stress in my relationships. Okay. Whew, this is all heavy stuff, guys. So I wanted to talk to you a little about where I am today. So that was kind of my journey. That was kind of my research. And now I want to talk to you about where I am today. This past February, I had a breakthrough for the first time in 22 years. Months before February, I had learned about my diagnosis and others who go through PMDD, I had come to the realization and acceptance that God wasn't going to take this from me. Remember, as a teenager and even as an adult in my 20s, I would pray heavily, God, please take this from me. So I came to the realization that God wasn't going to take this from me. And that was a great realization. But as my cycle would come and go, I was still really angry with God. And I mean, I would literally shake my fists at him. And I didn't feel peace that he would make me keep this disorder. And every cycle, you know, I would put my walls up from him and I wouldn't pray and I wouldn't use him. So February this year rolled around, and it was the first time I found myself on my knees asking for God's assistance, because I could feel the buzz and I wanted so much for the first time to do my best through it. Instead of being angry, I pleaded for him to protect me from me, that the thoughts that I had to be better off leaving or dying, or ideas of hurting myself because the vibrations and the conversations in my mind were so interrupting, that I needed protection from myself. So instead of walling up, God, For the first time, I kept him in and I held on to him as much as I could. And that was huge for me. I was 32 years old. Well, almost 32. In April, I was 32, and that was February. So I'm trying to keep up this habit of making sure that God is still part of my life. But I still have a lot of work to do with that, and I'm still working on that. So today, what is going on actually today? I am heading into my luteal phase. I ovulated over the weekend, and probably this weekend I will experience all of those symptoms that I talked about that come with my time. Symptoms such as feelings of sadness, despair, probably suicidal thoughts by the end of my luteal phase, tension, anxiety, panic attacks, which are the worst. Mood swings, frequent crying. I'll cry myself to sleep probably every night at the end of this week. Lasting irritability, anger that affects other people. I have like no patience whatsoever with my kids. Lack of interest in daily activities and relationships. I get really upset when I have to do the laundry and the dishes and, you know, those mundane tasks of being a mom. I can't focus on anything. That's why a good run with a movie is a lot better than trying to lift weights, because I'm not going to make any progress lifting weights, but you can get me on the treadmill because I'm so unfocused that I don't have to think about what I'm doing. Tiredness, low energy, like I said, lots of naps, trouble sleeping, feeling out of control, and then there's all those physical symptoms on top of that. This weekend we have no plans, and my family knows that it's my time to not feel good. I have planned my meals for the weekend, and I hope that I can get some prep done to make things run smoother this weekend. I get a lot of anxiety in social situations, and church is one of those situations. So when my luteal phase happens, those last 5 to 7 days, usually there's one day of church in those, and depending on what day it is, it really wipes me out. I usually go through lots of wardrobe anxiety before going to church too. And I'll get to some of the reasons why my appearance is so important to me down at the bottom. So I continue to exercise and eat healthy as I can, but I find myself struggling with sugar during those red zone times in my cycle. I know a lot of women do, like during their PMS, but like this is an incurable craving and I can't get rid of it even after I've stuffed myself sick. I will still crave sugar. But I find that if I plan my meals and prep them, I do a lot better. And not buy sugar. Don't buy it. Don't put it in my house because the cravings are, you know, insatiable. I give myself a lot of self-care. This doesn't mean that I neglect my kids, but my priorities shift away to giving them all that I can, because pretty much I'm in a state of survival. I have to give myself all I can. And so that means I'm still doing my best, but my priorities have just shifted a little bit. I mentioned last week in the podcast that there are some things that I do to manage my emotions, like not throwing gas into crucial conversations, to not, you know, making sure I have those crucial conversations when I feel better, using thought work and gratitudes, reading my scriptures. Like I said, I'm really trying to say my prayers constantly during those times. And I'm at the point where I know every month that this will pass. I know that every time my period starts, I will take the physical pain over the mental and emotional pain any day. And I like that is kind of what gives me hope. It's only 5 to 7 days. It's only 5 to 7 days. You can do this in 5 to 7 days. I'm always telling myself, you can clean up your house in 5 to 7 days. It's okay. You know, just let it go. It's not a big deal. So coming kind of final points here. I am really great at hiding what's going on. I got really great at it as a teenager, and I'm really good at it now. And I guess you could say that I'm like a master liar, but not in a way that I want to deceive you with evil. I want you to see normal. I want you to see all put together, to see beauty, because what I see is scary. It's anything but normal. It's falling apart. It's mentally sick. And that shame of not being good enough, you know, I experienced that, and I do not want anybody to see that in me, because I truly feel like it's not me. And so my master deceiving is to protect me and to protect the people that I love. People think that this is what you would call like unapproachable, but I'm really just a down-to-earth person, and I'm really realistic. And honestly, I will happily share with you anything I have learned about my disorder, but not until I know I can trust that person and I know that I have like their unconditional, maybe understanding, maybe not love, but just an understanding. So with this podcast and me sharing my story for the first time, I am feeling really vulnerable. I'm dropping that wall down and giving this story to you to allow you to make your own judgments. And I feel like I'm naked in the public square. that's the only way that I could explain that, is like I feel naked in the public square. I'm hoping that you will gain strength to be vulnerable by hearing my story. And I want you to realize that there is so much story to everyone, and that we need to cease uneducated judgment. I want you to know that you are not alone, and that I see you. And it's so important to me to tell you that I see you. When I was, well, in my teens and then into my 20s, as I still was experiencing this, one of the reasons that I didn't share it is because I wasn't over it yet. All the time you hear people tell of their stories, you know, their strength, their changing moments that they overcame, and then they shared and taught. And I felt like I wasn't good enough because I never overcame, that it would come back. But what I'm realizing is that I overcome this every darn month. I do this every month, and my family does this every month, and they are doing a great job, and we are all doing an amazing job. So sometimes we don't have to share our stories until we're done with them. But I really feel like it's important to know that sometimes those stories won't be over in this life. And we still can't keep to ourselves what we are learning and going through. And this will be an ever-changing journey for me. So in closing, if you have any questions or comments about PMDD, if you want to share your story with me, or anything that relates to PMDD, you can either share it in the comments section below our show notes, or if you feel like you need one-on-one, I would absolutely love to get an email from you and help you and listen to you in any way that I can. Sometimes we just need a listening ear. So you can email me at Clarissa, C-L-A-R-I-S-S-A, at adagiofit.com. And I honestly would love to hear your story, and will keep anything confidential if needed. Finally, kind of along the same lines, I'm offering a free coaching class this Wednesday, May 23rd, and it's on self-love and kind of what I have done to increase my self-love even in the midst of my trials. You know, in any area of our lives, especially in mental disorders and physical disorders, you know, we can't make lasting change without loving ourselves first. So you can sign up on my website, adagiofit.com, and it's under Coach With Me, Programs and Classes, and it's the May class. And you can find out more details on the site and grab your spot. And I can't wait to have this class this week. I am super excited about it. My slideshow is all ready to go. And I would love to have you in class. So again, that's Wednesday, May 23rd on self-love. If you can't make it to the class, just sign up anyway and you'll get a link to view it and watch it later. So that's what's really great. Okay, if you've made it this far, thank you so much for listening today, letting me be vulnerable with you and sharing with you why nutrition and diet and exercise and sleep and managing our emotions and our schedules and our lives is so important to me. And I want you to remember that you have divine worth. That doesn't change no matter what you go through. And that you are doing great. You are doing the best you can. You are loved. So enjoy some sunshine, and I will see you guys next week.